Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. My name is Corey. I'm one of your hosts alongside our friend, Mr. Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, this time of year, it's fantastic. Things slow down just enough to catch our breath. We get to be with family. We get to fight off colds. What's new in the Joe Aitken household?
Well, I will sniffle. Tail end of a cold with the family. I don't feel like it's slowed down yet, Corey. Keep saying it's gonna. I don't know. It's a good busy, I guess. Great time of the year. Reflect on what we got going on. Hit a few conferences for ourselves. Learn a little bit about the industry. Yesterday, I attended a tree valuation seminar. And it perked a lot of questions in my mind. So I thought it was interesting. You know, it'll help lead into the value of a tree with our discussion and our guest today, because we kind of got to get into that also, because it's part of what he does on the side, I guess. But it's going to be fun. So I think you're right, Corey. I think we just go down like kind of a little bit holiday path. Let's talk about the season and one of the things that's one of the biggest part of the season. So why don't you have the honor of introducing our guest and what we're going to talk about today?
Surely. Well, this time of year, we like to put out an episode to reflect and think and talk about trees, specifically Christmas trees. So this year we thought, you know what? We've covered everything from why do people put up trees and how to keep them green and alive longer, or I guess they're not alive, but how to keep them green longer.
So why, appear alive, act alive.
Appear alive. Yeah, they've been amputated already. But why don't we bring in an expert and have him return to the podcast? So Dr. Don works with us at ArborJet. Obviously, he's got a pedigree far beyond what you and I and most people do. So Dr. Don, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Corey and Joe. Great time of the year and growing trees.
Well, I think that's what we're going to get into. You know, not just growing trees, because, you know, obviously that's what we do on a day-to-day business. Now, these are special trees. You know,
that's true.
Different. Now, our viewers or our listeners can't see your virtual background. Full of evergreens back there. Well, that's not your tree farm, though. With today's discussion on the holiday season and your tree, your Christmas tree, tell us a little bit about how you decided to do what you're doing on your homestead, and how's it going? So what got you into thinking to go this way?
It goes back several years. I always enjoyed nature, forests, wild animals. We did a lot of camping when I was growing up, and just liked the forest. I ultimately went to school, got a bachelor's in forest biology, master's in forestry, and then I really enjoyed the entomology side of that, and got a PhD. My parents had a little Christmas tree plot on their property, about 2 acres, and they really enjoyed growing the trees and interacting with the people who came and cut them down and paid for it. I was interested originally in trying to grow timber down in Texas, but the finances didn't turn out the way I planned, so I had to delay it. And then when I joined ArborJet and moved up to New Hampshire, we had the opportunity to buy some land, and we now live on 10 acres that most of it was old growth white pine timber. And again, I was intrigued by my parents' Christmas tree. And I thought, well, we need to manage the forest. And by that, I mean, we clear cut 6 acres and cleared out the stumps and started growing trees, Christmas trees. Most of what I grow is Fraser fir, con color or white fir, as well as a fair amount of white pine, which is naturally seeding in. And I'm managing about 500 of those. So
how long ago did you plant these?
So I've been growing trees for about 8 years now. So I just finished the 8th growing season. And yeah, I just started out. I planted about 500 a year for the next 5 years. And I want to say that if I had to do it over again, I'd probably try to find a little more fertile site. I am in a sand dune for the most part, about 13 feet of sand over bedrock and very little or low nutrient quality. And so I'm in order to keep the trees alive, I'm irrigating most of them from a pond. So
is that common for Christmas tree farms?
No. I just realized that because there's such low water holding capacity of this sandy site, I was going to need to water them regularly. And sometimes during the warmer parts of the summer, I have to water every 3 days just to keep them alive. So it's the water drains out so quickly. It's amazing. So about 2,000 trees under irrigation, and another 500, as I indicated, is about white pine, which are coming in naturally in the back four, as I call it. So those aren't irrigated, and they're pretty hardy, so they can tolerate the droughty conditions. So
I got one quick question. When you said the property was old growth white pine,
and yes,
when you cleared the land, did you bring a sawmill? What'd you do with all that old growth?
Yeah, ultimately I did get a forestry company to come in and survey, and they again cleared out about 66 acres, and I got a fair bit of cash for the timber.
And I wanted to bring that up because prepping the site, harvesting, there was no waste, and you did it right and had it surveyed. You had a forester come out, you sold off timber. You didn't mill it yourself, but I think it's a good starting point when we talk about getting into growing trees. You know, obviously you're not doing it full time.
No.
But you're doing it for the love.
It's pretty much a full-time job on top of my full-time job. So
let's talk about that a little bit. So what goes into, most people, so we harvest a tree. We live at 8,000 feet or so here in the Rockies. We harvest a tree. They grow naturally, firs, spruce, pine in the forest. What goes into managing a tree farm with the intention of those trees being harvested for Christmas trees?
A lot, to say the least. As I alluded to, you really have to find a site that is ideal for growing Christmas trees. I did not select the best place. So you really have to look at the land, the soil, the topography, do soil samples, determine if there's deficiencies, all that kind of stuff. If there are deficiencies, you might want to put out either lime or other fertilizers. Then, of course, you got to lay out the plots. You have to decide how many trees per acre, what is the spacing. You need to provide enough spacing so the trees don't crowd each other. My spacing is 7 by 7, so 49 square feet per tree. More than adequate. And some say that's probably, I could have put in more. A lot of people will put in 5 by 6 or 6 by 6 spacing. Eventually, once the trees reach about 10 feet tall, they may start touching each other. But you don't want that crowding out. So just a lot of things, spacing, lay out the plots. I had to supplement or add compost to the soil when I was planting, just so that I have a reasonable amount of nutrients for the plant to grow. Again, it's very sandy, very nutrient poor, somewhat acidic. And that's part of one of the problems I have now is nutrient deficiencies. And I'm trying to deal with that. But you space out the trees. You have to decide which trees that you're going to grow. Certain trees respond or grow better on certain sites compared to others. I have Fraser fir, Concolor, white pine. Two of them are fairly drought tolerant. The Fraser fir requires more watering than normal. Nutrient availability, what do the trees require? And again, you have to adjust depending on which species and that kind of thing.
Dr. Don, did you pick those trees? Those are your favorite trees, or did you?
The Fraser firs are referred to as the Cadillac of Christmas trees.
Yeah, that's what I get.
A lot of people really like them. I selected the Concolor because I hate blue spruce. They are nasty to handle. They're nasty. Concolors do have a bluish color, but they're a fir, so they're nice and soft. And it turns out that they really come out with a nice looking tree. White pine is again. I'm surrounded by white pine, and it's coming in naturally. And so I'm pick out the trees, make sure that they're spaced properly, start trimming them, fertilizing them, and then ultimately get a decent tree out of it.
That's a question I have. You'd think these trees essentially are getting 49 square feet, as you indicated.
Yeah,
and I'm sure everybody's, well, maybe I'm not sure, but one of the jobs I had growing up was working at a Christmas tree yard. So at a greenhouse, they would sell trees in the wintertime. And there was always that sweet spot that people wanted, right? It's got to fit in their house. Mm-hmm. So the target, most of the trees that were brought in were probably between 6 and 10 feet tall. Are you mm-hmm. seeing the same thing? And then how often do you prune, and what does that, or trim? How often do you do that? What does that look like?
Okay. Well, to answer your last question, trimming, I shear every year. And it depends on their age will dictate how much you need to. If the trees are growing really well, and they were this year, the terminals can be upwards of 2 to 3 feet long, but you don't want them growing or putting on that much growth in a given year. So I trim the terminal to about 10 to 12 inches so that they don't get too leggy, too thin or narrow and thin. You want them to fill out. And so mostly you're trimming the top third, and then you only very sparingly trim the middle third, and generally you try to leave the bottom third alone, because that, again, that's you're trying to gain some width and fullness, but Yeah, every year. Timing is also critical. White pine, you need to trim in late June. If you trim too late, they won't put on the buds at the right place. Fraser's get trimmed in July, early August, and then Concolors are June, July, and Fraser's are towards August. So, and then you're waiting for the new branches to harden off so that they won't sag and have problems with birds and so on and so forth. Again, you don't want too much growth, otherwise they're too thin. So about 10 to 12 inches.
What do you, it just reminded me when you're talking about pruning, have you ever seen the video where the guy prunes his Christmas tree farm with samurai swords?
And you use those shearing knives.
Really? Wait, yes. What?
Yes. Yeah, shearing knives. They're about almost 2 feet long, and you're swinging down at an angle to trim off at the right angle to get that Christmas tree form. And yeah, a lot of swinging. Shoulder gets a little sore, particularly.
I thought that was kind of a spoof, but that's
really. I did too. I figured you're out there with shears.
Well, some people will use actually weed whacker, brush saw type.
Oh, sure.
Setups, yeah. And they'll go up and down. But I have more control with the knives. And I can be pretty accurate on which tips I'm hitting. And then I come by with pruners to trim off the top at the right length. So, yeah, I enjoy it. I get out there and just start swinging. So
I think next time we're on the East Coast, when you're pruning, we're going to have to come do a live podcast there.
Yeah, sure. Come on out
with your Miyagi Do headband on, and
and Joe and I will be in full PPE 10 feet away, 20 feet away.
So yeah, I got two knives, one swinging up, one swinging down. Yeah, chop. So
I don't think, just hearing, halfway through the podcast, I don't think the general public honestly really knows how scientific and how laborsome it is to produce that beautiful tree for somebody.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort. And
like the days of the Griswold family Christmas tree where he pulls the root out and everything, it's on the station wagon. Yeah. And them days are kind of over, aren't they?
Well, Corey was just saying that he went out and took a tree from a native forest area. So yeah, you can still do that. But if you want the nice conical shaped trees, that's you go to a Christmas tree farm and you can get a pre-cut, or you can I am going to open my farm up to the public next year as a choose and cut.
So and how does that work? Because you got to think, I grew up in Wisconsin and we've been to Christmas tree farms where we do cut our own tree. And mm-hmm. At the time, 20 something years ago, at the time you could bring your own saw, couldn't be a chainsaw, but you could bring your own bow saw and do it. What are you mm-hmm. going to do, and what does that look like for insurance?
That's part of the why I didn't open this year, is trying to get my ducks in a row relative to liability and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can let people bring in their saw, or I will likely provide a handsaw. But obviously, in this day and age, you have to be careful about liability. So I'm going to create an LLC, limited liability company, and then get liability insurance to make sure that, and obviously create signs to indicate hazards and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's, I prefer to let them cut their own
get the experience.
It's the experience.
Yeah.
Some people will, or owners will cut the tree for you. You decide which tree you want to take, and then the owner will cut the tree. But that kind of takes away a little bit of the ambiance of the experience. Yeah. But I'm going to open it up to cut your own. Generally, it's a single price for any size tree. Some people will base their price on cost per foot of height. Others will, it's all dependent on this person situation.
We did that, now I'm thinking 15 years ago at the tree yard. We used to do it by the foot, and it varied mm-hmm. by the species too. The right. balsam firs, double firs, those were always a little bit more expensive because, as you said mm-hmm. earlier, it's the Cadillac.
Right.
And right. we used to, I forget what kind of pine because it's been so long, but maybe it was even, I don't know what kind of pine it was. Maybe Scott's. It was a longer needle, but they used to come painted.
Do you
paint any of your trees?
No, I won't paint. No. I am quite happy, somewhat surprisingly so, that the trees really look good color-wise. Of course, fertilizing them, giving them nitrogen is going to help that, making sure that they are not deficient in certain nutrients will help as well. If you do it right, the trees will retain their needles for 3 to 4 years, and so it'll be full even on the interior. And the color will be fine. As you get later and later into the winter, some trees will kind of fade a little bit and get off color. But usually by the time Thanksgiving and Christmas rolls around, they're still looking good. I do experiment with several different other species, including Leland cypress, Japanese cedar, arborvitae, and I got a couple Austrian and limber pines. So just playing around, see if I can create a nice looking tree with some of those exotic species. And I focus on Fraser, Concolor, and white pine. Yeah, the Fraser, the firs tend to be a little more expensive. Pines a little less, perhaps because of how fast they grow. Pines and like my Leland cypress, they grow real fast, 3 to 4 feet a year.
Wow.
The Frasers and Concolors are generally a foot or less, depending on the tree.
Don, as we're talking about kind of what goes into pricing the tree out, we kind of touched on this earlier, is that there may be some sprays required, and they may or may not be species specific. So how many sprays, once a year, twice a year, and for what?
Yeah. Fortunately, I haven't had too much trouble with pests other than weeds. The white pine, they get hit with white pine weevil. They'll take out the terminal. So I'll spray with carbaryl or permethrin a couple times in the spring. However, I still had some problems, and so now I'm injecting my white pine with our triage, and that's going to take care of it for 3 or 4 years. So awesome. But I'm treating these 2 or 3 inch trees down at the base, so I have to be careful. So
drill through it.
Right. And I have had problems early on with white grubs. They like the concolor trees. For some reason, they weren't really a problem with the white pine or the Fraser fir, but concolors, I was losing a fair number of those. But I ultimately put out some milky spore, as well as using, there's a GrubX, which contains chlorantraniliprole, very effective against white grubs. So I took care of that. Occasionally I'll have mites, And just periodically I have to apply and mite aside, but not major problem.
You're doing it as needed, which sounds more sustainable for the business, for the tree. But it was interesting, and Joe and I both nodded when you said that you do spray for weeds. You spray an herbicide, because our minds go there when you're managing a site for Christmas trees. So that was pretty cool.
Well, here's the a lot of growers or tree farm people generally don't spray for weeds. I mean, if the site is nutrient rich, you know, the trees can compete with the weeds without too much difficulty. Yeah. Again, I have sandy soil, nutrient poor. So my tree is going to be competing with whatever weeds are present. And so to make sure that my trees get as much of the nutrient available as possible, I'll control the weeds around the trees. I'll also mulch them at the base, and that helps to reduce weed problems as well as retaining moisture. So so altogether I have about 2,500 trees, and I only really intensively manage about 2,000. So I don't have a lot of trees per se, so I can pay attention to individual tree health. And so I'll go around frequently and just look at trees and see how they're doing. And if I notice problems, I'll address them on a per tree basis. But larger growers, you know, they don't have the time to do that. Right. So it's more a broad management scheme than what I do. So
now you're located in New Hampshire, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you part of any of like the Christmas Tree Grower Association or anything like that? Are you just so you are involved, you're a member.
Yes. So New Hampshire, Vermont Christmas Tree Growers Association.
Where does that region fall in? Because I know Michigan is third in the country on production.
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I know there are probably at least a couple hundred Christmas tree growers about a couple hundred in all of Vermont and New Hampshire. Depending on there's not a large number of large growers. Most of those large growers are out west in Oregon. I think one of the largest is somewhere around 7,500 acres, and they grow about 1 million trees a year.
Wow.
Or cut 1 million trees a year. So, but
you're more boutique, custom craft, and you're giving people the experience. It sounds like the business plan right now is ultimately bringing the trees to market by bringing people to the farm.
Which
is awesome.
I have some friends and family that are picking trees now, and if they enjoy the experience, and you know, if they enjoy themselves, that makes me happy. So
got a little tractor with a trailer, a little hay ride, bonfire, a little microbrewery in the garage.
Yeah, I wish.
So I can see it. That sounds beautiful, like Rockwellian Christmas tree farm. I love it.
So as we're wrapping up this episode, Dr. Don, we're so grateful that you shed a lot, no pun intended, but you shed a lot of light on the Christmas tree growing process. And Joe and I we're so amazed at how much we think we know, but we go on and we learn from experts like you. So before we sign off, is there any advice you want to give to people that are either going to harvest a tree, or maybe even some people that are crazy enough to start a Christmas tree farm, which I think would be awesome, but it sounds like a lot of work? And any last words you want to shed?
Well, I'd like to encourage everybody to come out and harvest a real Christmas tree. I think, you know, it just really makes the holiday special, having a real tree. Unfortunately, we're kind of on a minority now. A lot of people buying the fake trees, but still, from what I understand, there's still about 25 million trees, real trees, sold every year, and there's quite a few Christmas tree growers out there. Just want to say that, I mean, this is sustainable. As their trees are harvested, I replant, and the expectation is that I'll have a 8-year rotation through all the trees thereabouts, and continue to grow trees as long as I can. So, but it is very much enjoyable. It's more my hobby than anything, and I just I like nature and growing plants or trees, and it's certainly challenging. So you have to spend a lot of time and effort, you know, trying to get a tree growing. So it's not easy sometimes. Sometimes it is. It's amazing. Some trees just take off and everything's fine and dandy. Other trees, not so much. So you have to nurture them, and it takes time. So I appreciate you having me on, and come on by. I'll sell you a tree.
I would have to get it inspected, because I don't know if I can cross state lines without a everything. Yeah, you got to be very careful today. But Doc, I can hear your passion in what you, when you're talking about that. And I think that's what makes it so exciting for us to talk to you about it, because you're still excited about it too. So,
oh yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you, everybody else out there who celebrates, everybody else. Happy holidays. And we'll catch you on the next episode. So thanks, Doc Don.
Happy holidays. Take care.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.